America Looks Abroad. This is the 71st in a series of broadcasts by the staff members of the Foreign Policy Association, a nonpartisan organization which seeks to present objective analyses and accurate information on world happenings. Today's subject is Britain's New Eastern Front. Mr. James Frederick Green, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, is the speaker. Mr. Green.
Adolf Hitler's declaration of war against Yugoslavia and Greece early this morning adds another major section to the complex pattern called the Battle of the Mediterranean. Only a few hours after the announcement of a treaty of friendship and non-aggression between Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union, German airplanes and mechanized divisions began to move into Yugoslavia from many different points. In a lengthy proclamation, Chancellor Hitler declared he would fight on until the last Briton had met his Dunkirk in Greece. Several other developments last week also have to be fitted into this broad pattern. On Thursday, Dr. Matcek, the leader of the Croat Peasant Party, joined the Yugoslav government of General Simović. On the same day, the Premier of Hungary, Count Teleki, committed suicide. Great Britain's forces, meanwhile, continued their conquest of the Italian Empire, although last week they yielded Benghazi to the Nazi armored divisions that are pushing eastward across Libya. And finally, the American government rejected the protests of Germany and Italy over the seizure of Axis vessels in our ports, ordered the recall of the Italian naval attaché in Washington, and considered reopening the Red Sea to American commerce. Thus, the Mediterranean, like the North Sea, has become a battleground between Germany and Britain. It is difficult to piece together this gigantic pattern because so many sections of it remain hidden from our view. Great Britain is working desperately to create a new front in the Mediterranean area and the Balkans, and is striving to force Germany to fight somewhere in the east. The British have several very good reasons for seeking a new front in southeastern Europe. In the first place, the British hope to cut some of Germany's main line of supplies and make it more difficult for the Reich to utilize the foodstuffs and raw materials of the Balkans. For that reason, Germany in turn has sought to keep the peace in the Balkans. In the second place, and even more important, the British hope to compel Germany to divert men and material eastward. Britain lives in daily fear of an all-out attack, of greatly increased air raids and submarine campaigns, and of invasion. If Germany could concentrate all of its men and airplanes along the English Channel, Britain's chances of pulling through this spring might be very slim. By keeping Germany occupied somewhere away from the Channel, Britain divides the Nazi forces and reduces the danger of invasion. Herr Hitler, who is quite a student of history, realizes that Imperial Germany was defeated in the World War, partly because it had to fight in the East and the West at the same time. Hitler very skillfully avoided, until today, being caught in the same trap. He didn't risk war until he had signed his non-aggression pact with Russia, and he managed to expand eastward into the Balkans by diplomacy, rather than by actual fighting. Herr Hitler's plans went awry, of course, when Mussolini attacked Greece last October, since the resistance of Greece offered Britain the new front it had been looking for. In the third place, in addition to cutting Nazi supply lines and diverting Nazi troops eastward, the British hoped to protect their imperial lifeline through the Mediterranean. This lifeline is not absolutely essential now for commercial traffic, since most of Britain's merchant shipping to and from India, Australia, New Zealand, and the Far East goes around Africa. But this lifeline is vital in terms of blockade, prestige, and supply lines to the east. As in the World War, Britain has cut Germany off from most of its overseas trade. Now that Italy is in the conflict, it is even more necessary for Britain to hold the famous lifeline from Gibraltar to Malta to Suez to Aden. Should Britain lose these key bases, its prestige would be shaken, and its influence in France, Spain, Egypt, and many other nations would be weakened. The loss of these key bases, furthermore, would cut Britain's supply lines to its forces in the Mediterranean area and the Near East, and give Germany a new pathway to the Atlantic. Britain's chances of holding and developing this new front in Eastern Europe, so vital to Britain's survival this spring and summer, depend upon a number of different factors, upon the turn of events in Africa, in North Africa, in Italy, in Yugoslavia, in Hungary, and in Turkey, for example. It was Italy's mistake in attacking Greece in the first place, which gave Britain its foothold in the Balkans. It is Italy's weakness today that allows Britain to keep that foothold. For the first time this winter, we are receiving detailed accounts of the critical internal conditions in Italy, for two American newspaper correspondents, having left Rome, are now free to write frankly about their observations. both Mr. Saville R. Davis of the Christian Science Monitor and Mr. John T. Whitaker of the Chicago Daily News and the New York Post are describing the feud between the Fascist Party and the Italian Army, the blunders committed by the Italian High Command, and the growing resentment of the Italian people over the way in which their country is being taken over by the Nazis. Recent dispatches indicate Germany is sending 4 divisions of Tyrolean troops into Italy for service in Albania. Italy's empire seems to be crumbling rapidly. British Empire forces have almost completed their conquest of Italian East Africa, having taken Asmara, the capital of Eritrea, last Tuesday. They are now approaching Massawa, the chief port of Eritrea, and clearing the Red Sea of Italian warships. 5 Italian destroyers were either sunk or scuttled in the Red Sea last week. Other British troops in Ethiopia have just taken Adowa and Addis Ababa, the capital. In Libya, however, Britain received a setback last week when it withdrew from Benghazi in the face of Nazi mechanized divisions. It appears that the British decided to reduce their overextended supply lines and to consolidate their position in Egypt before summer weather makes operations difficult. By wiping out Marshal Graziani's armies in Libya, Britain has removed any immediate danger to Egypt and the Suez Canal. While a clash between British and German forces may take place in the near future, it is perhaps doubtful whether Germany can throw enough men and supplies into North Africa to redress Italy's defeat. Another important section of this large pattern lies in Yugoslavia, which is now resisting German invasion, with perhaps 700,000 men under arms. The danger of disunity and even civil war was ended last Thursday, when Dr. Maček joined the new cabinet. Dr. Maček, leader of the Croat Peasant Party, apparently received several concessions from the Simović cabinet as the price of his loyalty: greater autonomy for Croatia and more Croatian influence in the government and in court circles. Now that Croatia has given allegiance to the new Yugoslav government, it will have to bear the brunt of the first attacks, since Germany completely surrounds Yugoslavia on the north and east. Belgrade, the Yugoslav capital, and Zagreb, the Croatian capital, are declared open cities, although Belgrade is already being bombed, and the Yugoslav government is planning to direct its defense operations from the southern part of the country. While the Yugoslav army lacks modern airplanes and mechanized equipment, it is generally believed to be well equipped with small arms and very well trained for mountain warfare. In the World War, the Serbs fought valiantly in their mountains for almost 2 years, until they withdrew through Albania to Corfu. Yugoslavia can probably again put up a stiff resistance against Germany while striking at Italy's troops in Albania, and, most important, while giving the British a few more weeks or even months of additional time in which to prepare both their home front and their Mediterranean front. And time is of the essence of Britain's problem today. A third factor affecting Britain's role in this complicated situation is the position of Hungary, where resentment against Germany has been provoked by Count Teleki's suicide last Thursday. The Hungarian premier, who probably had been asked to permit German men and materials to cross into Yugoslavia, or even to assist Germany in its attack, replied to Hitler in the most dramatic and effective way possible. According to newspaper reports, the Hungarian public fully understands the significance of Count Teleki's protest, even though active opposition to Germany is probably impossible at this stage. Again, from the British point of view, the death of Count Teleki is helpful chiefly in that it may delay Germany's plans momentarily and perhaps damage Germany's prestige in Eastern Europe. A fourth and equally uncertain factor is the role of Turkey in the whole Mediterranean struggle. At present, it looks as though Britain has increased its influence in Turkey and persuaded the Turks to start joint defense conversations with Britain, Greece, and Yugoslavia. The Turks have made it fairly clear that they intend to fight for the Straits and for their territory north of the Straits, and that they have the approval of the Soviet Union for this policy. Recent dispatches from Ankara suggest that Turkey's hesitation to support Britain results, at least in part, from Britain's inability to deliver the armaments which it has promised. The recent Ankara conferences of the British War Minister, Anthony Eden, and the British Ambassador to Russia, Sir Stafford Cripps, as well as the new Yugoslav-Russian treaty, suggest that the outbreak of war in Yugoslavia may produce closer cooperation between Britain, Turkey, and the Soviet Union. One final and quite unexpected development now has to be pieced into our Mediterranean pattern. and that is President Roosevelt's hint on Friday that he may open the Red Sea to American shipping as soon as Britain completes its conquest of Italian East Africa. Such an action, which may be taken at the President's discretion under the 1939 Neutrality Act, would allow American vessels to supply Britain's African forces with foodstuffs and raw materials, but not with armaments. This policy might easily precipitate another crisis in relations between America and the Axis, since our vessels en route to the Red Sea would possibly be attacked by German surface raiders. Up until the present, of course, American ships have been barred from the Red Sea war zone, and American arms to the African and Mediterranean theaters of war have been carried in British vessels. Thus, the situation along Great Britain's new eastern front is extremely fluid. Quite literally, almost anything may happen within the next few weeks, or even within the next few days. For Britain, the margin between victory and defeat this summer is still exceedingly narrow, and this margin will remain exceedingly narrow for several months to come. Great Britain has not yet achieved equality with Germany in airplanes or airplane production. It has not yet reached capacity production of armaments, and it has not yet solved, as last week's speaker in this series emphasized, its very critical shipping problem. To stave off defeat this spring and summer, Britain needs time to mobilize its resources, time to receive supplies from America and the British Empire, time to organize its new front in the Mediterranean. As long as Britain can hold this front in the Mediterranean and compel Germany to scatter its forces, Britain perhaps can postpone Germany's promised all-out drive against the British Isles. In this connection, it is interesting to notice how history is repeating itself in the Mediterranean because of the continuing influence of geography upon diplomats and soldiers. Just 137 years ago, Napoleon was standing at the port of Bologna, waiting to invade the British Isles. When he found invasion was impossible, he was compelled to turn eastward and to strike at what he called Britain's feet of clay in the east. Napoleon, like Hitler today, had to strike at the British Isles through the Mediterranean and through Egypt. In the World War, the German Emperor was similarly frustrated in Western Europe and was forced to fight on two fronts. In that war, Winston Churchill tried to break Germany's hold on Europe by assaulting the Turkish Straits, and he almost succeeded at Gallipoli. In this war, the same Winston Churchill is trying to break Germany's hold by gaining a foothold in Greece and Yugoslavia, and by eventually assaulting Bulgaria, Romania, or some other portion of the German domain. The Mediterranean, which has been the center of European history since ancient times, is again the battleground of great empires. In the eastern Mediterranean, where long ago the siege of Troy took place, Britain is blockading Italy's Dodecanese islands and negotiating with Turkey. In the central Mediterranean, where Rome and Carthage were once locked in a death struggle, Britain is striving to shatter a modern Roman Empire. More than a century ago, Lord Nelson destroyed French sea power at the Battle of Trafalgar. 10 days ago, Britain seriously weakened Italian sea power at the Battle of Cape Matapan. Today, as in many previous periods, a struggle for the control of Europe and for control of the high seas can be won or lost in the Mediterranean. It's therefore easy to realize the importance of this rapidly shifting struggle for the Mediterranean and the determination of Great Britain to hold its battle line there.
Mr. James Frederick Green, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, was today's speaker in the America Looks Ahead series. If you'd like a free copy of this talk, address your request to the Foreign Policy Association, 22 East 38th Street, New York, or in care of the station to which you are listening. The Foreign Policy Association is a nonpartisan organization open to all who are interested in American foreign policy. This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.